Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Protégé Call. This is Mario Michael. I'm really excited today because we have actually a student of USTLA's on the phone with us, and we don't do a ton of Protégé calls with students, you know. But the reason why we actually selected Paul was because, you know, here's a guy who, and I'll let him tell his story and how he got involved, and you know, really, also I also wanted him to discuss, you know, how he's been through the 3-day training and through some of these programs with USTLA and how he had such good success, you know, or how he's having great success doing it. You know, I want him to kind of go through, hey, here's the things that I'm doing and here's the things that I'm actually doing in the trenches, right? You know, rolling up the sleeves, getting in there, and these are the things that I'm actually doing that is leading me to having success with doing this. So, you know, the reason why I wanted to have Paul on is because, look, you know, when you're doing the business and you're doing the tax liens and tax deed business, whether it's myself or Sean or, you know, Tony or Todd or whoever it is, Frank, you know, sometimes you could be doing so many deals, you get used to doing it, that sometimes you forget what it's like to be back in that position where you just got involved and you're just trying to figure it out. And so that's why I think it's a great thing to bring people on like Paul Eterno, that here's a guy who, you know, had nothing to do with real estate. He's never really done a whole lot of real estate other than the couple properties that he's bought, you know, on his own personally. I think he had a couple rental properties. And here's a guy who just goes through the training, goes through the courses, and just, you know, he's sending deal after deal after deal. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Paul, since you got involved back in, and correct me if I'm wrong, in December of last year you got involved. Is that right?
That's when I attended the 3-day workshop. Yes, that's correct.
3-day workshop. And since then you've done roughly, if I'm not mistaken, more than 10 deals or so.
I actually have 9 deals since April. April of this year was when I made my first investment.
9 deals. Right, and that was also not including though that there was a couple deals that redeemed on you that you bought, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, and when you look at the numbers, here's a guy who's doing deals, right? Here's a guy who's actually out there in the trenches making money. And so, you know what, instead of me keeping on rambling on, let me kind of get Paul on explaining, you know, Paul, tell us your story. Tell us how you got involved, what was going on in your life, and, you know, just start from the beginning and go from there.
Okay. Well, I have been in corporate America, had been in corporate America for 37 years. I was I was in the field of human resources. My last position was for a global telecommunications company. We were a worldwide footprint, and I was the senior vice president of global human resources. And about a year prior to last February, say February of 13, there was a lot of talk about the company being bought out by a private equity firm. So I knew at some point down the road the company was going to be bought out and that my future with the company would be at risk. And sure enough, in February of 14, the company was sold, and that day came where the corporate attorney comes into my office and says, Paul, your services are no longer required. And it's interesting because even though you know that the day is coming and you think you're prepared for it, when it happens to you, it's still a shock because, you know, what do you do with the rest of your life? Here I am, a 59-year-old executive. The only thing I've ever done in my life is human resources. I did it right out of college. And now I've got a family with, you know, 3 young kids and a wife to support. And a house on Long Island, and I'm out of a job. But unfortunately, I did have an employment agreement where the company is paying me for 2 years, so I did have
fortunately.
That. Yeah, that's right. It was a 2-year deal, so I very fortunate and blessed to be able to have an income coming in while I'm trying to get this business started. But it was a stressful time for me, very stressful. The last year at the company was stressful, and you know, the period following the day where I got laid off was stressful. So my wife, in her infinite wisdom, suggested that I take a year off and decompress a little bit and just think about and pray about what I wanted to do, think about what God would want me to do with the rest of my life. And I did that, and it was probably the best advice anyone's ever given me. It gave me a time to think about what I might be able to do with the skill set that I had. I could pray about it to God, and lo and behold, in August, I get a phone call from a friend of mine. August of 14, I get a call from a friend of mine out of the blue, telling me about this business that his cousin's getting into, buying properties for the back taxes. He's telling me, Paul, you can get properties that are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars for, 10, 15 cents on a dollar. And I'm listening to him talk, and I'm saying, you know what, Frank, sounds real good, but, usually when things sound too good to be true, they are. So I sort of wrote it off for a while. And then one night that following October of 14, I fell asleep one night watching Thursday Night Football on the sofa. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and lo and behold, there's this infomercial on television about flipping houses. And there's this guy, Armando Montelongo, talking, and I didn't know anything about who he was. So I went on Google, and I Googled him, and sure enough, there he was. But underneath his name was, all these testimonies of people that have been scammed by him. So I said, okay, this isn't the answer. But over in the corner, there was this little box for the United States Tax Lien Association, and I clicked on it. And they had a bunch of videos on their website, so I started watching those videos. I ended up watching about 2.5 or 3 hours of videos that night and didn't go to bed till about 6:30 in the morning. And that was the springboard for me. That December, I signed up for the three-day workshop in Durham, North Carolina. And that was my first exposure to the United States Tax Lien Association. And Sean Higgins was the individual that was facilitating that workshop. And I attended that workshop, and I was just sold. I really was. I said, "Wow, this stuff is the real deal." And I just saw myself being able to do something like this. So I went through the 3-day program. At the end of the program, I signed up for the Diamond Executive program, and. And that's where it all started. And believe me, that was a huge, huge step because it wasn't an inexpensive proposition. But, I felt I needed to invest in myself. I mean, I was doing one thing for 37 years in business, and this is an entirely new venture for me. So I figured I had to spend some money on myself and invest in myself to sort of re-engineer what I was going to do with my life. And I have to tell you, looking back, it was some of the best money I've ever spent in my life. It was a great investment. So
let me ask you this, Paul, because, like you said, here's a guy, 59 years old. You've been in the same career for the last 30-something years of your life. You've been an executive at the same job for the last 16 years. And one day you walk in and, boom, it's all gone. And instead of going back and saying, let me go back to like most people would, to the normal or the, what was familiar to them, you went in a total different route. And what I love about you is that, all the deals that you're doing. So one of the things I would like to, kind of talk about is, because what I want you to understand, Paul, is there's a lot of people that are listening on this call that are saying, okay, that's all great. The story, I understand, some of people are actually in the same position that you're in, so they can relate to that, or they feel like that can happen at any moment because, that whole job security, it obviously mm-hmm. isn't so secure, even at your level as an executive. And, sometimes we think this job security, and I think some people are listening saying, man, I can relate to the story. I understand where you're coming from, and I get it. And I also want to ask reflect on that. And I don't know if by the way, if you're listening to this call, if you hear that beeping noise, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's the app that we're using that's just beeping along and if it's going to stop once we finish doing this recording. But if you're listening to it, I do apologize. It's a new app, and we're trying to figure out how to use it. So anyway, Paul being in New York and me being in Orlando, we had to figure out another way to make this happen. So, but one of the things that I know that the people are sitting back and asking themselves is, okay, you've done 9 deals. And if you don't mind me asking, roughly how much have you invested so far in those 9 deals? Just on the top of your head. Sorry to put you on the spot.
Just under $400,000.
Okay. So just under $400,000. And if you had to place an amount of fair market value on that, roughly what would you say it would be?
More than double.
Yeah, and
yeah, probably about $850,000 in that range.
Yeah, and possibly closer to the million range, depending on how you I'm guessing, because I looked at some of your deals as far as how you exit and use it. But a minimum of, let's go with the low end. I'd rather do that. A minimum.
Well, that's why I gave you those numbers. I like to think conservatively.
Good. Yeah, well, that's a good thing. So, you know, so what are the things that you feel that you are doing and that you've done in the everyday business? You know, I understand the training and I understand all that, but what are the things that you feel like the skill sets that you're actually doing every day that are helping you to do deals? What would that look like?
Well, I think I don't want to minimize the training aspect of it, Mario. I mean, again, I'm learning an entirely new skill set here, so I try to attend as many trainings as I possibly can, as many workshops, and the reason being is I want to try to gain as much information as possible on this new skill set that I'm learning, and that's the beauty of this business is that this is a skill set unlike what I was doing in industry. This is a skill set that I can use for the rest of my life.
Right.
You know, it's not something that's going to be taken away from me. And I think that sense of security and being in control of my life totally and not having to depend on a company or a boss for my security is big. So, you know, for those of you that are in industry and looking to do something different, this gives you a lot of freedom and a lot of flexibility and a lot of security as well, as long as you follow the steps that the USTLA provides you to follow to be successful. So I try to attend as many workshops as possible because just attending one workshop is not enough. There's a lot of technical detail that comes out in these workshops, and the brain just can't absorb it all in one sitting. So I find that even though it may seem repetitive to go to workshops over and over again, I always seem to pick up something new that I may have missed from a previous workshop. So I just want to mention that. But what I also like to do is just keep myself in the company of people that have had great success with the tax deed investments. You know, being in Sean's company, being in Tony Martinez's company, being in your company, you know, and just being around people that have had success, being part of the mastermind, and being in the company of all of those incredibly intelligent and well-grounded individuals is just priceless to me to be in their company. I feel blessed to have met everyone that I have met since getting involved in this program. But on a day-to-day basis, I try to be I also try to be consistent with pulling lists. I mean, that's what's key. You need to pull as many lists as you possibly can on a daily basis and a weekly basis. It's a numbers game. The more lists you pull, the more opportunities for deals that you'll uncover. And doing the research, going through the 14 steps and being diligent about doing all the research that's required to make sure that you have all the data that you need on a particular property to make sure that you're going to make a good decision with your investment.
Let me ask you this. So, you know, a couple things I want to add to that. One, that, you know, you and I have had a conversation back, I don't know, close to 4 or 5 months ago. And, you know, one of the reasons why, because I remember initially before you got involved with USTLA, you were actually looking to start a franchise, which was going to be a minimum of a couple hundred thousand dollars. And I just want to kind of add a note to the whole of what you're saying about, you know, the lifestyle, you know, and being a real estate investor, I think one of the things that it provides is not just the ability to make some money, but the reason why you really went towards, you know, real estate and USTLA was because you saw that it would provide a lifestyle as well as a financial gain to it. So, you know, which is important because, you know, in your life, like you said, as an executive taking the train in the morning, you know, and traveling, you know, an hour and a half there and an hour and a half plus back and then being there all day, not seeing your family a whole life. I mean, almost having kind of like myself as we – a lot of us, and even people listening on this call, you can relate to what I'm saying. The fact of a lot of times we put our family at sacrifice for success, you know?
Absolutely,
and we think we're doing it for them when in reality, you know, they're kind of deteriorating on the back end, and we think we're just being contributed is enough when in reality they want more of our time. And I know that's one of the big reasons why you went towards doing real estate, because the fact that it not only provides you with the ability to make money, but also the ability to have a lifestyle. And that's why this call right here that we're having is, I want Paul to share with you the things that he's doing, whether they seem simple, whether they seem hard, whether they seem easy, it doesn't matter. What matters is that I want him to give you that information so that you can have the same lifestyle of traveling around the country and, you know, enjoying your life, enjoying your wife and your kids, and at the same time making money. And that's the whole purpose of this. So Paul, when you talk about pulling lists, right, I know that seems so general. So help me understand, how do you determine what list you're going to pull or where you're going to pull them? What's your theory on that?
Well, what I was taught to do, and what I am doing is I think about places that I'm familiar with, places that Amory and I and the kids have gone on vacation, places where I have friends that are living, you know, states and counties where my friends have moved out of state and are living, those type places that I'm most familiar with. That's basically what I do. So I've looked in Florida. Amory and I have, my wife Amory and I have vacationed in Florida multiple times. So I've done some. I've done a lot of investing in Florida. I'm looking at the North Carolina. A friend of mine that moved down to North Carolina. He's told me a little bit about North Carolina, the state, and the area that he lives in. So I'm looking at that area as well. I've also Amory is from Pennsylvania, so I know certain areas in Pennsylvania. So I'm looking in Pennsylvania. Connecticut is right across the Sound from Long Island, so it's geographically feasible for me to get there to go to an auction. If I need to, I could just take the ferry across, which I've done multiple times, and attended a few live auctions in Connecticut. So it's really a matter of convenience and a matter of what makes logical sense. You want to have some familiarity. The more familiarity you have with an area, I think the more educated you can be and more knowledgeable you can be about an area and make a more educated decision. So that's really my theory.
So one of the ways, and write this down if you're listening to it, one of the ways of choosing a state is find some areas that you're familiar with. Find some areas that, you know, you want a vacation. I mean, again, you guys heard some of this stuff before, and sometimes it's just the simple things that you really need. It's the fundamentals that you need to make a decision to keep doing what we know we're supposed to be doing, right? So you know, that's how you choose states, okay? But let me ask you this question. Before you choose a state, do you determine, like, hey, it doesn't matter if it's a lien or deed, or are you focused more on deeds right now? How are you determining that?
Well, I am focusing on deeds right now, so obviously I look at the deed states. I'm looking purely at deed states right now because that's my strategy. My strategy is to deal with deed only. I have not done any lien certificates at this point yet. Not to say that I won't do them in the future, but right now I'm focusing on deed states.
Got it. So first you made the decision to decide deeds or liens, which, you know, we've talked about. So you decide to do deeds. Then you're like, okay, look, so here's the states that I want to do. Now let me ask you this. This is kind of where some people get hung up on, and I know this is, you know, okay, I can choose a lien or deed. I can choose a state based on if it's a lien or deed, okay? And then, but the next question, this is where a lot of people get stuck that I've saw, whether being trained or training themselves, where they feel like this is somewhat overwhelming to choose. But how are you choosing counties?
Well, again, I'm choosing counties based upon the level of familiarity that I might have with a county, based upon areas that I've visited or areas that I know that family members or friends live in, or areas that I've just done research on and learned about. But mainly it's areas that I've either been to or that I know someone that's been to, or I know someone that's living there, either a friend or a family member, and that's really where I start.
Got it. And, you know, and I can piggyback on that too. So one of the things that I've learned was exactly what Paul's saying is, you know, choose some places that you want to visit, all that, and then at the same time when choosing counties, find some places that you're familiar with. The other thing that I've learned is just look up and see what sales are happening in the area, you know. So if you choose Florida or North Carolina, you know, first of all, I would recommend that there's some, you know, a certain amount of population. I'm not going to get into all that on this call, But, you know, you want to make sure there's a minimum of a population. And once you determine that, then just see what's happening. I mean, look, if there's a sale in, you know, Orange County, Florida, and it looks like there's a decent amount of properties on it, and you start researching that list and find out there's a lot of good properties, well, then call the realtor or, you know, get the Chamber of Commerce and start determining at that point is if this is a good area to actually do deals in. You know, so there's two ways of doing it. It's first you can determine, choose the county based on, you know, what's the people are saying, what's the realtor saying, what's the, you know, Chamber of Commerce saying. Or another way you could do it is just find out, hey, in Florida, what sales are currently happening right now, and then choose the county. And if some of those counties have really good properties on the list, then go forward and saying, hey, realtor, is this a good deal? Or is this a good area? Or Chamber of Commerce, is this a good area? And, you know, the reason why I'm saying that is because one of the things that Tony Martinez says all the time, and if you have ever been around him, you can relate to what I'm saying, is the fact that price solves all what? Problems.
Issues.
So, right? I mean, it really does. So, me, I'd rather just look for a good deal than be so concerned about, oh, is the county perfect? And I'm not saying that. I do what Paul's doing, too, so don't let me discount that. I'm just saying that sometimes we get so hung up on the county thing versus actually finding a good deal. So you'll go to these, you know, three or four counties, let's say, Paul, and there's no good deals there. And then, all right, North Carolina is no good versus saying, you know what? What's actually happening in North Carolina right now? Okay, there's six counties that are having sales. Go take all six county lists and actually start doing research on them. And yep. Then if you actually find deals that will look good, then go do some more research, because here's the thing. If you can get it at the right price and you can get it at a right deal at the right price and you can get something for 10, 15, 20 cents on the dollar, most likely, you know, I mean, I've bought some properties in some pretty rough neighborhoods, Paul, you know.
As have I.
and there's still money to be made there, isn't there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure.
So I say the way that I do it is a little different, not than Paul, but I do it in a way where I choose a state and then I just find out what counties are having sales. And then from that point, I just start looking at those lists because, you know, I'll be honest, Paul, I mean, most of those lists don't have more than 20, 30, 40 properties on them if they're a deed sale. So it's not like there's 10,000 of them, right? Now, if we were talking about liens, I may approach it a little bit different. Don't get me wrong. But in this case, we're talking about deeds. And most deeds, if you took an average, I'm not going to say all. I'm going to say on average between all states, you know, you're lucky if you get 30, 40, 50 properties per list. So if you found six good counties that are having sales, how long would it really take you to go through those lists and find some good deals? And then all of a sudden you can say, man, this looks like a really good deal. Even if it's not perfect area, but I can get it at the right price. Well, let me ask you this, Paul. Would you rather buy something at 70 cents on the dollar in a perfect area or 10 cents on the dollar in an okay area?
Obviously the latter.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying? And sometimes when we only look for the best areas, what happens? That's more competitive, right?
Yes.
That's more of a people are paying a whole lot more because they feel more comfortable. You and I know, hey, if I can go outside of my comfort zone and go where everybody else isn't going, I'd rather pay 10, 15 cents on the dollar, even 20 cents on the dollar in an area that most people say it's an okay area and they'd rather not go and get a better deal than go and try to compete against these, sometimes as I would call them, I don't know if incompetent would be the right word, but anyway, that they pay way more than what they should be paying at sometimes, right?
Yeah, so, and that's a key point you're making, Mario, because I think for everyone that's listening, for the millions of people that are on your call this morning,
millions that are watching at home.
Yeah, right. I think if you deal with counties that are more difficult to deal with, you're going to find less competition because no one's going to want to go that extra step or two that it takes to really navigate that county. So you will have much better success in those types of environments where there's much less competition. So don't always shy away from an area that might require you to take an extra step or two to get all the information and learn about properties and deal with the county than you might think. So don't
exactly.
Shy away from those.
Exactly. So, you know, you should be writing this stuff down. So if you don't have a pen, make sure you re-listen to this call and write a lot of those key points of those nuggets that you're getting that you can take back and actually apply into your business. Now, Paul, let me ask you this. So here's kind of the, you know, thing that I've noticed. It seems like every time I call you, you're in a different state. So I don't know, you know, if I'm not mistaken, you know, you've been to Connecticut, which is close. You've been to New York. You've been to Florida. You've been to, if I'm not mistaken, Pennsylvania. Have you been there yet?
I haven't been there yet. No.
You were planning on going there, right?
I'm planning on going there. Yes.
I think you've also been to Oklahoma, right?
I've been to Oklahoma. I've been to Tennessee.
That's right.
And also in October, I'm going to be working my home state here, my home county, Suffolk County.
So, you know, one of the things I want to recognize about you that most people are not willing to do is just think about this. I mean, you know, okay, you've been involved, let's say, 9 months or so, and since then you've been to Connecticut, you've been to, you know, Oklahoma, you've been to Tennessee, you've been to Florida. You're going to be doing one in your local area there. You're planning on in the next month or so potentially going to some of the Pennsylvania ones that are coming up. I know you're going to show up at the North Carolina ones in the next couple months when you find some good areas that are having sales in the next 5 or 6 months, whatever that is. And one of the things I want to recognize about you that most people aren't willing to do, because this is kind of their theory, and I just want to hear what you have to say on it, is they always say, well, you know, if I spend $400 or $500 and I show up at an auction and I don't get anything.
Yep.
You know?
Well, all I can tell you is this, is that I've done online auctions. In fact, my first two purchases were through online auctions. And although I got lucky with those two purchases, by and large, there was heavy, heavy competition, which means that the deeds were being bid up to, you know, it's almost 60 to 65 to sometimes even 70 cents on the dollar. Going to a live auction, although it costs you money to get there, in the long run will save you thousands of dollars because there's much, much less competition. Online, anyone from anywhere in the world can bid on a property. When you go to a live auction, I've been to 4 or 5 of them now, and the most people I've ever seen is maybe in the range of 16 to 25 people. And of those 16 to 25 people, maybe only one half of those people are actually bidding on the property. So there's much, much less competition when you go to a live auction, which improves your chances of winning a deal tremendously. So although it may take you a little bit more time and money to get there, if you can get a property for thousands of dollars less, you've more than made up the money that you would have saved by going to the live auction.
Yeah, and well, you know, and look, I think if you're really serious about this, and I think this is the ultimate question that people have to answer at you know, while you're sitting there, whether you're driving in your car or you're sitting down at your desk and just listening to this call and you're taking notes as we're talking. You know, one of the things you got to determine is how serious are you about the business? That's really the question, because if you're really serious about the business, I mean, it's kind of like somebody saying that, you know, I want to start a McDonald's, but I don't want the French fry cooker, right? I mean, it's part of the business. You need to do that to get involved in the business. Now, I'm not saying that you can't do online auctions, but what you hear us saying, people that are actually physically doing deals right now consistently, are saying that we get more deals in person than we do online. Out of the 9 deals Paul has done so far, and 3 of them that redeemed, so he really did 12 minus 3, let's call it that, you know, 2 of them he bought online. So you're talking, you know, maybe 10 or 20% that he actually bought online, which tells you that maybe online, not saying it's horrible, not saying you can't get deals that way, it just may take more work or you may have to pay a little bit more money. So the point I'm making is this: if you're really serious about the business, then look at it as a business. And part of the business is showing up at auctions. So if you got to get on a plane and fly to Arkansas or Pennsylvania or Tennessee or Florida or Connecticut or wherever you're going, North Carolina, Vegas, wherever you want to go, look at it as a business expense. And it takes some money to get going. I mean, you gotta invest some money to make some money back. So I want you to start looking at it as a business, and if you're really serious about it. So the question you got to ask yourself is, hey, how serious am I about this business? Because if you really are serious, you're going to show up and you're going to do what it really takes. And that part of what it really takes, I believe, is you got to show up at auction. So that's why I bring up the McDonald's thing. It's like saying, well, you know, I want a McDonald's, but I don't want the French fry cooker or the burger or the thing to flip burgers, right? I mean, you're not going to have a business. It's the people that are dabbling, trying to get their foot wet, you know what I mean, their feet wet.
Yep.
I mean, so the question is, are you the person that just want to get your feet wet and try to just dabble with this? Or are you somebody like Paul that says, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make it happen, and I'm going to look at this as a business, and if I look at it as a business, then it's just a business expense, right? I mean, it's a write-off. So
exactly right, yep.
So I highly encourage you to really make that decision. Are you serious? Are you really serious, or are you just somebody that's looking to just dip their foot in the pool? You know, question is, you want to go in the whole pool or you want to dip your foot in, you know? And if you really want to go in, then make it happen. Do what Paul's doing. I mean,
and Mario, regardless of whether it's a business or not, it is more cost effective in the long run to go to attend a live auction. It just is, because the money that you will have spent at an online auction in a property that's been bid up, you will save that money by going to the live auction, because chances are you're not going to have as much. The chances are great that you're not going to have as much competition. There's not going to be as much bidding going on. You're going to get that property for thousands of dollars less.
Right, right.
And that will more than make up for the cost of getting to that auction.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times what people have is the uncertainty of, if I keep showing up and don't get something, but I think what they're missing is, if you keep showing up and actually going, you will get something, you know?
Absolutely.
It's a numbers game. I mean, that's the way that people have to see it. So yeah, no, for sure. This is really good information for people to listen to. So, you know, you're pulling lists, you're showing up at auctions. What other things, if you can add some more things to that, that you're consistently doing that are leading you to success that you're doing right now or having right now?
Well, let's see. I try to be consistent in what I'm doing. You know, I life can tend to get in the way. You know, when you have young kids, like
right.
I do, I have a 10 and a 12 year old that are very involved in after school activities and sports, and life can just get in the way. And when you're at home, you have to really time block, carve out time out of your day, and get into an habitual routine, so that you know that you're going to put in the time that you're going to need to do all your research, to pull a list, do the research, and schedule your upcoming auction dates. So if I can give anyone advice, it's do that time blocking and be accountable. Be accountable to yourself, and be accountable to someone else that has had an order of magnitude more success than you have had, so that they can keep you on the straight and narrow path. You know, so you set up some sort of a reporting relationship where you're reporting your activities on a weekly basis to someone, so that they can monitor your progress and give you feedback and make sure that you're doing all the things that you need to do on a daily and weekly basis to be successful.
You know, it's amazing, because sometimes when I think about some of the conversations that I have, Paul, it's a lot of times it's the same conversations. It's you know, a lot of times it's like somebody's looking for that magic pill. Like there's a magic pill out there that they're just going to take, and it's automatically all these deals are just going to fall into their lap. And unfortunately, it just doesn't work like that, you know.
No, it takes effort.
And that's my point. It takes effort. It takes accountability. And a lot of times, you know, the reason why it's so important to get out there and time block, the question that I'd ask most people right now on the phone, instead of just saying time block, I'd tell you to ask yourself a question right now. Are you currently time blocking in the business? And if the answer is no, one of the most important things that Sean and Tony talk about all the time, the number one thing that they say is going to be the difference between you succeeding and not succeeding, is time blocking. So if you're not time blocking, then you're not going to be consistent. If you're not consistent, then you're not going to find deals. And then 6 months are going to go by, and you're going to say, well, you know, you're going to start telling yourselves, as Sean would call it, the stories we tell ourselves. And the story you're telling yourself is, well, I'm doing it. I'm looking at lists. I'm pulling stuff. And I'm just not finding anything. When in reality, you haven't been consistent at all. You know, I remember when I was going to the when I was going to the gym, you know, and I was talking to Tony Martinez about this, and I'm like, no, Tony, I said, the problem is, you know, I feel like I'm not building any muscle, and I feel like I'm, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to, you know, look, I'm not trying to become Ronnie Coleman or something, which is like the, one of the biggest guys in the world. I just want to get a little bit of muscle, you know what I mean, Paul?
Yeah, I hear you.
And I remember talking to Tony about this. He's like, well, how often do you go to the gym? I said, you know, I would say, you know, about five or six days a week. He said, about, or you do? I said, well, I'd say five or six. He's like, okay, how sure are you about that? I said, well, you know, I'm pretty confident. He's like, all right, here's what I want you to do. For the next 30 days, I want you to, every time you go to the gym, I want you to just put an X on the calendar on the day that you went. And in 30 days, let's have a conversation again. And I said, okay, and you know what? Actually, no, he didn't tell me to have the conversation. He said, he didn't tell me anything like that, actually. He just told me, hey, over the next 30 days, just mark it out. And then this way, at the end of 30 days, you can look at it and really see how often you're going. I said, okay, no problem, I'll do that. Well, 30 days go by, who do I get a call from? So he actually didn't tell me he was going to give me a call. He just told me to manage it. He gets on the phone, he's like, hey, what's going on? I said, well, nothing much. He's like, where's that calendar? I'm like, what calendar? I knew it exactly what he was talking about. I'm like, what calendar? He's like, the calendar for the gym. I said, oh, it's downstairs. I said, I'm trying to do something with my wife right now. He's like, no. Walk downstairs. So I walk downstairs with my head hanging low, you know, and I look in front of the calendar, and he says, okay, FaceTime me. Get on FaceTime, and he says, show me the calendar. And I start showing the calendar, and sure enough, he's looking at it, and he's like, bud, you went on average 2 times a week. He said, you had this story you were telling yourself that I'm not building muscle and I'm eating right. That was the other thing I said. And I'm eating right and I'm not building muscle, but I'm going to the gym 5 or 6 days a week. He said, when in reality, you're going 2 days a week, and I don't even want to get into your diet. He said, because you are telling yourself some crazy story that you're eating right and you're actually showing up in the gym, when in reality, you're not showing up and you're not eating right, but you've told yourself you're doing all the right things and getting the wrong result. And that's what most of us do. We think we're doing all the right things because we don't have anything to accountability. Part of accountability, Paul, and you would know this as being an executive, is measuring. So you got to manage it and measure it. If you're not measuring it and seeing exactly what's going on, for example, measure means I take a 30-day calendar, I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, wow, in the last 30 days, I went 10 times. That's 2 times a week. That's way less than what I need to be doing. I should be going 5 days a week. So I say all that to say that a lot of times we tell ourselves these stories that we think we're doing something when in reality we're not. Is that is that somewhat relatable, Paul? You know what I'm talking
about? Oh, absolutely. In fact, this is one of the areas where I think I've failed so far. But, you know, Tony Martinez has offered to hold us accountable by allowing us to report to him on a weekly basis, which is something that I haven't started doing yet that I need to do, because there have been times during the last 6 months where I've totally fallen off the wagon and 2 or 3 weeks have gone by where I feel like I've done nothing in my business because, you know, family obligations have gotten in the way. And it bothers me. It truly bothers me. And then I'll go to a training, and that training just reinvigorates me. I get so inspired when I hear the stories that Tony or Sean or Dante Pirano tell you. And just by listening to people that have been so successful, it just gets the competitive juices flowing again. And I come back from that, and I'm back at it again. I'm on my computer, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. My wife is saying, are you coming up for air sometime today? I find that going to these training sessions, just in addition to the information that I gain by being there, they provide such inspiration and motivation to me to get me back on track again. But look, we're all human. We all fail at times, and failure's okay. That's the way you learn, I think. You know, you learn by making mistakes. If you never made any mistakes, then you wouldn't learn anything.
Right.
But we all make mistakes. We all fail, and that's you learn from your mistakes, and that's the key, is to take those failures and turn them into successes. So,
you know, it's amazing that you mentioned too about the whole, you know, life getting in the way, family getting in the way. you know, all those things, you know, but in reality, even though that has happened to you because of the accountability and because you have somebody holding you accountable, that you stayed on track and that's why you've been able to do deals. What's amazing is the fact that, Paul, I've met people that work 80 hours a week. I've met people that work 40 hours a week. I've met people that work part-time. I've met people that have no jobs. I've met people that are just retired, you know, 2 years ago, and people that have been retired 10 years ago. And they all say the same thing: I have no time. It's kind of like, it's funny that I was having this conversation with a retired guy. He's like, you know, I just feel like I have no time. And it was amazing. I'm like, let me ask you a question. When you're working 10 hours a day, how are you still doing this, 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 and this, which are all the still the same things you're doing now, but you just still don't have no time? It's crazy because we always convince ourselves of these things that, like, hey, when I get retired, then I'm going to have all the time in the world to do whatever I want. And all of a sudden you get retired and you're still like, hold on a second, I still don't have time. So for the people that are saying, well, I don't have time because I'm working a job or I have family obligations or I have this, let me tell you something. I can save you a whole lot of headache and hassle. Eventually you're going to retire, or eventually you're going to get to a point where, we'll just call it retirement, and you're going to still wake up in the morning, and at the end of the day, you're still going to be saying the same thing, man, I have so much to do with such little time. And I know that may seem like there's no way, but I promise, I've met people without jobs. I've met people that have been retired, and they all say the same thing: I don't have time, or life is continuously getting in the way. So I think that's why it's so important to have exactly what you're talking about, the fact of not only the accountability, but also just blocking out the time and holding yourself accountable. I mean, holding yourself accountable to say, you know, hey, if this is what I committed to do. Now, one of the things that I'll add to that is I think where we mess up as human beings, at least I do this, and I'll just kind of admit some of my own flaws, is the fact of that I overcommit. And I remember 2 years ago when I haven't went to the gym for 2 years in a row, and then all of a sudden I got back into the gym and I had this New Year resolution. I was all pumped up. And I said, I'm going to go to the gym 2 hours a day. Well, let me tell you, when you haven't been to the gym for 2 years and you all of a sudden make a commitment that you're going to go 2 hours a day, I probably can tell myself I've already set myself up for failure. And what most people do is they overcommit to the point where then all of a sudden they're so overcommitted. So I was like, man, I can't go for 2 hours today. So instead of just going for 20 minutes or let's say an hour, you know what I do? I do nothing. I say, there's no way. I can't do 2 hours. So I don't want to go back on my goal and say, well, I'm going to go for 30 minutes. So I do nothing. I don't show up. So the reason why I'm saying all that is one of the things that I think is when you make that commitment and you create that time block is really what can you and what will you really do? And if it's just an hour or 30 minutes, that's okay. Be consistent with that. For 21, you know, some people say 21 days to create a habit. Some people say 66 days to create a habit. Do it enough for at least 21 to 66 days in a row to where you start developing a habit. Then all of a sudden it just becomes natural and normal. Then you can start adding more time versus say I'm going to do 4 hours a day and then you do nothing at all. Say I'm going to do an hour or 30 minutes. The question that you really got to ask yourself and really write down right now is this: what can I and what will I really do every day? And whatever that is, don't beat yourself up if it seems small, because I can assure you if you start big, you're not going to do it anyway. So start small, make it happen, and then just start going through the motion. What do you think, Paul?
I agree. That's very good advice. In fact, when I started doing this, I felt that because I was out of a job, I could spend, you know, 6 hours a day. I would start at like 9 when the kids were off to school and then finish at like 3 when they got home. And so I thought I could get 30 hours in a week, but I found that even that was a little bit too much, so I reduced it to like 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day, and that seems to be working much better. So don't overcommit yourself. You know, start small. You can always build on it later on. But if you have a reasonable goal, something that you can see yourself attaining, you'll be more inclined to stick with it. But if it gets to be too much, you're going to just give up, and then you won't do anything. So Set reasonable goals, and then you'll have a higher probability of achieving them.
Exactly. Well, Paul, I got to tell you, man, I appreciate you being on the call with me for the last 45 minutes or so. And you know, this is extremely valuable for the people that are listening to it. They get to hear it from, you know, a third party instead of just somebody that's part of USTLA, you know, they get to hear it from somebody that's, you know, part of it, but in, you know, not working for it, right?
Yep.
And just a third party that's been through the training, has recently been through it, and just that's having a ton of success. So, you know, I just want to say I appreciate it. I know the people that are listening to appreciate it. And any last words that you want to add?
Just thank you for the opportunity to be on the call. I appreciate it very much. And I wish everyone out there success in their investing. You can take it from me. If you put in the time and you go through the training, you will be successful. Just follow all the steps that you're taught and be consistent, and you will find yourself making some nice money and doing it in the convenience of your own home. So thanks again,
awesome.
Mario. Appreciate
awesome.
It.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks, everybody, for listening to the call. Again, to me, another great Protégé call. I really enjoy doing these. Go out there, make it happen, make some money, and let's get it done. Have a good day.